This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith episode number 117, and it's early December 2015. John Blickman joins me this week to discuss brewing high-gravity beers. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're offering 6 issues a year up from 4 at a great discount. You can get a new discount code now, which gives you 15% off everything they sell, including subscriptions and training. The new code is BeerSmith2015. I encourage you to check out this great new magazine for homebrewers at beerandbrewing.com and use the offer code BeerSmith2015 to get your 15% discount today. And also, Beersmith Mobile. The mobile version of Beersmith is a perfect companion to our desktop brewing software. It includes all the tools you need to create recipes on the go, share them with your friends, and act as a pocket brew timer. Check out Beersmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile or find it on Google Play, iTunes, or the Amazon App Store. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, my guest is John Blickman. John is the head of Blickman Engineering, which makes some of the finest home and professional brewing equipment, and has also launched a new product line called Anvil, which we'll be discussing near the end of the show. John's been on a number of times before, most recently in episode number 110, discussing nanobreweries. John, it's great to have you on the show.
Great to be back, Brad. How's things been with Beersmith?
Oh, Beersmith's been doing good. I'm working hard on the next version, trying to finish it up. Always a challenge pushing software out the door. You always run into a few more problems, but I understand you've been busy too.
Yes, we have. Lots of new things in development and keeping up with the busy Christmas season and all that good stuff. So, but it's good problems to have.
Yeah, it is nice. I enjoy the holidays too. Well, John, you want to talk about some of the challenges you run into when brewing high gravity beers. Let's start by discussing some of the styles that fall into the category of high gravity. Set what we're talking about here.
Yeah, sure. So high gravity is kind of a little bit of a nebulous term. There's no hard, fast. It's got to be, you know, anything above such and such a specific gravity, but it's typically around a 1080 beer is considered high gravity. Probably the most common ones would be like wee heavy, barley wines, Doppelbach, Belgian Strong. Those are all on the real high end, like 090 to, you know, 110 and above. And then there's Baltic Porters, Russian Imperial Stouts, and those sorts. And, you know, generally about anything with Imperial or double is going to be a clue that this probably is a high gravity beer. And, you know, things like Imperial IPAs, those are all pretty big beers. So.
Well, obviously, one of the big concerns you run into when brewing a big beer is efficiency. You simply don't get the same efficiency you get when you're brewing a smaller beer. Can you explain why that is, John?
Yeah, part of the problem is you're really trying to reduce or eliminate sparging, because what you're trying to do is get a very concentrated wort, pretty much the first runnings all the way through. So brewers will either completely eliminate it and just take all the first runnings and then not do any sparging. And what you end up with is a lot of residual sugar that's left in that grain. Mm-hmm. There are a couple ways around that. One of my favorite ways is to just make a second running and brew a smaller beer afterwards, so you don't waste that wort that's in there. You can sparge all the way and get pretty decent efficiency, but then you've got to boil for a long time to reduce your gravity back down. So there's always some of those trade-offs.
Right, and I mean, some people make another beer with the second runnings, right?
Yes, yes. I've done that a number of times. And it's particularly if you do something like, you know, that are complementary styles. Like one of my favorite big beers to brew is a Scottish Wee Heavy. And then you can just make a, you know, a simple, very low gravity, like a 035, 040 Scottish ale with the second runnings. So that's a real great complementary way to do that. So.
Yeah, they call that party guile brewing for people who want to look that up. And we've done, I've done a couple episodes and articles on that, I think, in the past.
Yep. Very old technique.
Yep. So to compensate for the lower efficiency, you're going to have to add some more grains, obviously. Do you have an idea of how much efficiency drops for a typical homebrew system?
You know, a lot is really going to depend on, you know, the individual brewer's techniques, the, you know, the crush and, you know, a number of the normal variables. But I think you'd expect about a 10 to 15% drop in efficiency from your normal, you know, 050, you know, 060 beer. That, at least that's been my experience. And in general, the bigger the gravity, the bigger the drop in efficiency. So
what does that mean in terms of adding, you know, you add a pound of grain? Is it a lot?
Well, with I just did a 5 gallon batch, and I was trying to hit about 1.1, 1.11, and that was about a 30 pound grain bill. So you're really talking a number of pounds that you would need to, you know, add. So 10 to 15%, you know, on that, you're probably adding somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds extra malt. So it's not like it's massive, but it's definitely something to factor in into Beersmith.
Well, scaling a normal beer like an IPA up to an Imperial IPA involves a lot more than adding just more grains. What are some of the other considerations that come into play when you're designing a high gravity beer recipe?
Well, with the malt, you just can't just necessarily add more base malt to it. You really kind of wash out your specialty grains. They'll become less prominent, if you will. The other thing that you can't do is just double the grain bill either, because you'll generally go a little bit overboard in the other direction. So there's a happy medium somewhere in between to get a good balance. And that does take just a little bit of experimentation. If you've not brewed a big beer like this before, and you're not starting with a recipe from somebody else, and you're trying to scale up a beer that you have, I'd go about halfway in between for a starter.
Mm-hmm.
So
in addition to that, obviously you got to worry about hops and aging and all kinds of other things as well, right?
Yes, indeed. Hop utilization, you know, the utilization of hops really decreases with these increases in specific gravity. It just reduces the solubility of those isoalpha acids. So, you know, to get that back up, and this isn't a linear equation either. Mm-hmm. So you're definitely going to need to add more hops to get to that bitterness level. And then the other issue is to get that balance correct, because now you've got a huge malt bill. And with, you know, your attenuation at 75% or so, you're really going to have a lot of residual sugar. So you're going to need additional hop bitterness to balance that. You know, there's barley wines that, you know, have such amount of residual sweetness to them that you really need to be in that, you know, 70 IBU plus. So it's all about that gravity to bitterness ratio. So pay attention to that.
I like calculating that out, the bitterness ratio, which is the OG over the, or the OG points over the IBUs, I believe, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So how does, by the way, Brad, how does Beersmith compensate for these high gravity worts with respect to the hop utilization?
Well, it does calculate it out inside the program, so it will give you the correct IBU number. But as you point out, you still have to increase the IBUs as you go up. So even though the program will calculate, for example, the fact that you're getting lower hop utilization because you have a higher gravity in the boil, it's not going to automatically adjust your IBUs up. For example, if you double your gravity, you're probably going to want a lot more IBUs to balance out that malt, right?
That's right. Yeah. Just the base, you know, recipe. So say you've got a you know, a Scottish ale that would be normally, you know, 25 IBUs, for example, you may want to brew a wee heavy that has closer to, you know, 40, maybe, you know, it just kind of depends what you're trying to do with that recipe. Yeah. So you would want to shoot for a higher target. And then also, your utilization is down. So these beers, although some of them aren't hop forward, still require a lot of hops just to get that balance right.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, another limitation is obviously the volume of your mash tun. You mentioned you were doing a 5-gallon batch, which is about 19 liters. And typically, if your mash tun's only 5 gallons, you can only hold about 13 pounds or 6 kilograms of water. Grains with the water in there. So how do you get around that if you're brewing something really big? I think you mentioned, mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly how many pounds you said you used, but it was quite a few pounds for a 5-gallon batch.
Yes, it is quite a bit. So there's the easiest way, and there's no shame in this, is to simply add extract. You know, brew, you know, fill your mash tun to the capacity you have based on, you know, you've got those limitations as to what your equipment will do. And, you know, and simply add extract to make up, you know, in the boil kettle to make mm-hmm. up that difference. There's that's a very common way to go. There's commercial breweries even that do such things. So, you know, that's one way to do it. Another way is just to brew a smaller batch, you know, so, and sometimes that's nice because some of these bigger beers, you know, you just don't drink that much of it at once. You know, you don't, you know, I like to put mine either in kegs so I can just have a little bit at a time, or I'll use the smaller bottles just because they're just so big and flavorful. So consider a smaller batch size too. So you might, in your, 5-gallon system, you may just brew 2.5 or 3 gallons of that as well. So that's a possibility. Later on, I can talk a little bit about a double mash trick that I just did some experimentation with.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next is I understand you ran split mash, I think it was last week, and did two separate mashes, right?
Yes, I did. We get a number of requests or just kind of what's on an FAQ now on what kind of specific gravity I can brew in a BrewEasy, one of our newer products that's out. And, you know, we can generally get about, you know, and again, this depends on, you know, your technique, your crush, your water, all those normal things. But we can generally get about, an 070 beer or so. And what I was trying to do is just kind of push the limit and just see what I could do with that. And one of the ideas was to just do a double mash in that. So what I really did is I calculated the malt bill for the entire batch, and it turned out to be about 30 pounds. And I was shooting for about a 100 or 110 starting gravity. Mm-hmm. And when I did the crush, I split it into two separate pails when I crush the malt. And so I've got two 15-pound separate mashes. I started with the BrewEasy. I started with all the liquor for the entire batch. So a 5-gallon batch was about 10 gallons. And
right. That, so it's just to set the stage, a BrewEasy is kind of like a brew in a bag system, right, John?
Yeah, it's a hybrid of that. But you get the typical, you get the traditional mash filtration with it. And, you know, so it's it uses a, you know, the same type mash tun you would use for fly sparging system but you're just recirculating all of the wort at once, you know.
Right. It's got a wort recirculation pump in it, I think.
Right. Yeah. Recirculation pump and temperature control and all that good stuff. Very, very compact, fun system to use. So.
But, you're still brewing with, typically 5 gallons and what's the total volume of the system then?
The total batch size is 5 gallons. So it uses a 7.5-gallon mash tun. We can get, if you really load it up, you can get about 18 pounds of malt into a 7.5-gallon mash tun. And this one, I just split it 50-50. So it ended up being about 15 pounds, which was pretty easy to get into that mash tun. And then the boil kettle is a 10-gallon kettle.
Mm-hmm. So you have the capacity then to run, well, you're running basically a split mash with 15 pounds each.
That's right.
What were the results? I understand you did quite a few measurements along the way.
Yes, I did. On the first mash, again, I was using 10 gallons of liquor to start with, because I needed to have enough to run a second mash, and I knew I was going to get more absorption in those grains. So my first mash was a 048 wort with 8 gallons in the kettle, and that equated to about 68% efficiency, something like that. So pretty typical for the Brewheasy. And so then I emptied, I just drained all that wort into the brew kettle and emptied out the mash tun, and refilled it about half full with the wort from the previous batch, and then dove in again and ran it again, and ended up getting after the end about 6.5 gallons of an 090 wort into the boil. And so that was about just a little under 60% mash efficiency. So that really goes along with about that 10% drop overall.
So I guess the key point is you recycled the wort from the first mash.
Yes.
To use in the second mash, right?
Right. So I didn't add any additional liquor. I was using the 048 gravity wort and recirculating that through the second mash. And the nice, you know, so that way I was really able to overcome that, you know, the issue with not having enough. And I was really kind of surprised how quick it really was, because everything's up to temperature. You know, you don't have to, you know, scour and scrub the mash tun like you would when you're going to put it away, so it doesn't get all stinky. So I just rinsed it out real quick and loaded it back up. So it was a pretty quick process on that. So it worked out pretty well. You know, I, at the end of the boil, I was at about 5 3/4 gallon with a 1.100 wort. So that was pretty big sticky beer. So
your 1090 did get up to 1100 then when we were done.
Yeah, actually 1.0. So it was right at 100.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have boiled some more down, but I was just I was pretty happy with the 100, and that way I'd have enough to make sure that carboy was full. So.
So how much water or wort was absorbed in that second mash? How much did the grain absorb that time?
I don't have the notes in front of me, but volumes? I think it was about a gallon and a half, something like that. That was lost to absorption, if I remember off the top of my head, right?
That doesn't sound too bad then.
Yeah. So, you know, and one of those things that I would probably do slightly different, you know, with the first batch, I did not do a mash out and raise that up, mostly because I was thinking, you know, because it would be too hot for the second second go in. I think I could do that and then just put an immersion chiller in to drop it down, you know, back down to that next strike temperature. But, you know, that's a little messing around for a few points. So I don't know if it's really worth doing that time-wise.
Yeah.
So
did you measure the pH as well?
Yes, I did. You know, and I'll call myself an equipment geek, but I'll admit that I'm not a expert in mash chemistry. So I was a little concerned about whether I would achieve the proper mash pH on the second mash. And for this batch and for others, I'll adjust my calcium in my mash to 100 ppm. And my first dough in, I was at on the first mash, I was at 5.15 pH, so right there where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And on the second mash, I was assuming I'd be a little bit higher on the pH, but I guess with the lower pH wort, I actually got down to about 5.05 on the second mash. So just
that's probably, I assume you're using some dark grains, no?
A little bit. There was a little bit of 120 Lav crystal and a little bit of chocolate malt in that.
Yeah, well, even pale malt is slightly acidic, so it's going to lower the pH a little bit, no matter what, between the two.
Yeah. So all in all, mash pH is dialed right in, and those were measured at mash pH too. So You know, they'll go up a couple tenths, you know, if you measure that at room temperature. So,
and of course, another interesting factor when you're brewing a big beer with a lot of grains in it, because you have so much grain relative to the amount of water, that's going to drive the pH down as well. So you probably don't need as many water adjustments for a high gravity beer as you might for a lower gravity beer.
Not so much. So that's a very good point. And, you know, in the case of the breweries you're brewing a bag, you are running a fairly thin, you know, respective, you know, a little bit thinner mash. So, you know, having a little bit more calcium is helpful. So it worked out. I was pretty pleased with the whole mashing process, and it worked out pretty well. So.
And you mentioned the wort was pretty thick at the end. Did you have any problems with draining it or boiling it or anything else?
I definitely made sure that I drained the last mash, the second mash, slowly to really let that trickle through. And I definitely did do a mash out. So I brought that up to about 168 degrees to thin that wort so that when I drained it, that it was, you know, I was getting out as much as I could. And I ran it pretty slow just to get it, to get as much out as I could. And that worked pretty well. But, you know, again, you know, it's kind of one of these things too, where, you know, if you miss it by a little bit, you know, just adding a, you know, a pound or so of extract is not, is not a big deal.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about now, you had to ferment the beer, obviously. When we talk about fermenting the beer, that's another factor that comes into play, is you've got to have a proper aeration. You got to have a good yeast starter to ferment this high gravity beer out, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, that's probably one of the key elements, is more so than making the wort, is making sure that you have a great fermentation. You know, these higher gravity beers, the yeast take off pretty good, but it's getting them to finish their job, because as you get up into those higher alcohols, the yeast don't exactly appreciate that unless you've really trained them for that wort. And so that means a lot of yeast and a lot of healthy yeast. One of the things I would normally do for this would be to brew a related beer. Sometimes I'll brew like just a Scottish ale when I want to brew a wee heavy. I'll make that, you know, a couple of weeks before, and I'll harvest the yeast off of that batch and then use that for the wee heavy. So I've got plenty of yeast in there. In this case, I didn't plan ahead. It's that season. So,
I know some people even go so far as to use champagne or wine yeast for high gravity beers. What are your thoughts on that?
I personally have never done that, but I do know that a lot of people do that. In this case, I made about a 2 gallon starter for a 5 gallon batch of an Edinburgh yeast, aerated it well, used the yeast nutrients, and I got a pretty decent bit of that. And I also ended up with a can of Owen Lingley's Imperial yeast, the joystick that I added as well, mm-hmm. just to make sure that I had enough yeast. And I gave it a real good dose of oxygen through an aeration stone. I use Super Ferment. There's a bunch of different yeast nutrients that you can use.
All those things probably help, though. I imagine the aeration, very, very important for a beer like this, right?
Yes. And one of the other things I did is about 6 hours or so after the first oxygen dose, I actually gave it a second oxygen dose. There wasn't any fermentation activity yet, but they're in there starting to bud, and that's when they really start to consume a lot of the oxygen. So I gave it a second dose at about the 6 hour point afterwards. And there are people that will, through that first, you know, that first 24 hour period, you know, dose it multiple times, but I'm generally,
Sounds like an interesting idea, I guess. I know it's commonly done when you're making mead, but I know there's some people that don't like to do that after you pitch for beer.
Yeah. So that really got it going great. I came in down in the morning, and it was a yeast mess in my refrigerator.
Well, that's good.
So I had that mess to clean up, but at least I was pretty happy that I got a pretty good fermentation going. And even for the, you know, the first week, rousing the yeast just by stirring it up a little bit or shaking the carboy a little bit, just kind of rocking it is helpful just to make sure that that yeast stays in suspension long enough to do its thing.
So. Yeah, and another point I wanted to make is, you know, typically they quote yeast starters at, you know, you want to have pitch like a million cells per milliliter per, per milliliter of beer, but it's also per point of gravity. So as the points of gravity go up, it becomes more and more important that you have that additional yeast, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like the yeast load that you would really need to give a lager. You know, so I mean, if you've done lagers, it's really, you know, similar to that, where you need about double what you would normally pitch to get it going properly.
Exactly.
And it can't be, you know, you can't just open up a smack back or a vial and chuck it in there. You really need to make sure that it's activated and that it's healthy yeast. So the starters, you know, a lot of the reasons I use starters is just to make sure that I've got healthy yeast, not just yeast.
Right. Especially important for liquid yeast. The dry yeast is kind of nice, though. You can, you know, like if you're using champagne yeast, for example, yes. You could just buy several packets and hydrate them a few minutes before that, and that's usually sufficient.
Yeah, absolutely. And the wine yeasts are generally very clean. They're not, they don't add a lot of fruity esters or anything, and they will ferment very dry. So that's a great choice. In this case, I'm going to turn this into a sour. So I've got a smack pack of Roselaire to add here after primary. So
you're making a sour barley wine?
A sour wee heavy. I'm going to make some sour wee.
Sour so, wee, huh?
We'll see what happens there.
Sounds interesting.
That's the beauty of
are you adding lacto or are you adding Brett?
I think it's the Brett.
Brett, yeah.
Yeah, so that Roselaire blend from Y-Yeast.
Sounds really nice.
Yeah.
Well, another consideration is aging. High-gravity beers take quite a bit of time to age out, don't they, John?
Yeah, they do. You know, so the big key there is patience. And, you know, a month, you know, 3 weeks in primary is usually considered too long for a typical ale, but it's, you'll generally, if you've got a proper, yeast, health, you will have fermented, out the, you know, the main sugars that you're going to get. What you really need to do is leave it in contact with that yeast, because these yeast have been pretty stressed out fermenting such high gravity, wort. And they need some time to kind of reabsorb the mess that they created in the fermenter. So, you know, let them do their job and let them reabsorb that over, you know, a period of about 3 weeks and then rack to your secondary. You really don't have to worry about your autolysis at that, you know, that kind of age. So
do you do anything different with fermenting temperatures or diacetyl rest or anything like that when you're brewing a big beer?
One of the things I do is I try not to let them get too hot unless, of course, you want, you know, if you're doing some kind of funky Belgian where you want a lot of these phenolics and esters and everything else. So I like to keep them in that, you know, mid 60 range while I'm fermenting. I think I did the wee at around 65. You can even go a little bit lower. Aging, you know, once you're through your, you know, once you're into secondary, you know, I would age those, you know, in, you know, if you can, in the high 50s, you know, but again, it's kind of dependent on what you're trying to do with the beer too. So, I didn't want a lot of, esters in this. So, I try to ferment it a little bit colder. So cool, I should say.
And then, do you have any tips for, you know, finishing out the beer, bottling, conditioning, those kinds of things?
I think one of the key things is patience. You know, I would leave it, you know, a number of months in secondary, before bottling or kegging. You know, you can, you know, if you've topped up your carboy, you can even, you know, leave it longer than that. You just want to make sure that you remember to fill your airlock and that, because it's easy to forget about these beers if you're going to age them for that period of time. But Bottling is great, I think. And you know, cause it's very easy to lay these beers up for
a lot of these beers were really meant to be bottled, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and these are nice because you can set those, you know, in a dark corner in your basement and let these things age for years. You know, they really start coming around, I think, around, you know, a year to 2 years is when the flavors really start coming out and, you know, and just making a real rich flavor to them. You know, once things kind of have that time to settle in, kind of like a wine, really.
Yeah, I know some people all even go so far as to do barrel aging, oak chips, that kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can just do a number of different things with these. You know, and that's another thing, too, is you can split these things, you know, into smaller fermenting vessels if you do want to try some of those things where you oak some, where you, you know, you can do things like, you know, even, you know, adding, you know, fruit to them and, you know, any number of things, you know, chocolates and all sorts of stuff if you want. So, you know, that's something since they do age for a long time and it does take a while, you know, sometimes splitting that batch so you can do some experimentation is a fun way to go.
Cool. Well, John, before we get off topic, I was wondering if you had any additional tips on brewing and finishing out that that big beer.
I think one of the big things is just kind of decide, you know, what means, you know, where your push points are for gravity versus time. You know, that, you know, I always say just kind of get close and then dial it in with the extract. I don't think there's any issue with that because you can spend a lot of time mashing and a lot of time boiling and all that to do it completely all grain. You know, so it's kind of, you know, what you're, you know, if that's the fun for you, by all means go that way. But if you're, you know, trying to cut down the time, don't be afraid to use the extract, and yeast, that's a thing. Plan ahead and make sure you have, a large dose, very, high quality, yeast that's in good condition. And, that'll get you through that fermentation. And then the rest of it is just, you know, patience, you know, let the yeast do its thing, let, you know, time do its thing, and you'll end up with, a beer that, you can lay down for many years and just pull them out on those special occasions.
Actually, that brings up a topic we didn't really talk about. What do you do if your fermentation gets a little bit stuck, on one of these large beers?
That happens, you know, and one of the things that you can do is to help prevent that is just kind of, rouse the yeast, you know, shake it up, stir it up, get it back in condition. You know, if it really gets stuck, then you start having to do some extreme things like, you know, adding, you know, some yeast nutrients and some more oxygen. But you do run that risk then of, oxygen or, you know, staling that beer. So
yeah, I would be very reluctant to add oxygen, particularly late.
That's only if it's only like halfway through, but generally, you know, I would only do that as a last resort. You know, pitching, another, pitch of yeast is another way to try to get that going. But at that point, to be honest, I would almost then go to a wine yeast, like a champagne yeast that will carry it through. Those yeasts are very tolerant of extremely high alcohol contents. And there's also not a lot of nutrients grape juice. Mm-hmm. So they're used to fermenting things that don't have a lot of nutrients in it too. So, that'd probably be my first choice. If it gets stuck and the rousing doesn't, help you out, would be to move to a wine yeast to try to finish that out.
Cool, John. Well, thank you, for covering that topic. And I actually want to give you a couple minutes here at the end to talk about your latest project. You launched a new product line a couple weeks back, and it's called Anvil. And yep. I wanted you to give us a short description of what Anvil is.
Yeah, Anvil is it's actually not just a product line. It's actually a completely new brand that we've developed. And, you know, we've been asked, you know, over the years to try to come up with a brand, a product line, that is more of a, you know, the Blickman line has got a lot of high end, it's very feature rich. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of innovation in it. But a lot of the brewers were really asking us for a high quality, reliable, durable product that doesn't have, you know, all those high end features that they may or may not need or want. And they wanted something that was, you know, put out by a company that's been around for a while, that, you know, had a reputation of putting out good quality products that would stand behind it. And, you know, here recently, you know, we've seen a lot of new entrants into the market, and really the quality varies all over the place. Some is pretty good, some is not so good, and some with some brands I've seen that it's both. Some produce nice and not. So, you know, we really wanted to do with the Anvil brand is definitely make something that doesn't sacrifice quality or durability and reliability for price. You know, so we've really gone with a straightforward design that is really designed to get the job done and get it done well. So we've got you know, a really amazing new burner that we've got out. We've got a solid line of kettles that we're real happy with. We've even created a stovetop version that's really tailored towards that type of brewer. So we've got some grain scales that you can set an entire bucket on and still read the scale. It goes up to 60 pounds. And then we've also got a scale that's really tailored towards measuring water salts and hops down to a tenth of a gram. So it's, you know, these are product that I personally use, and I really enjoy the features in them, and I like the quality. So, you know, it's something that I would use, and we're real happy to have come out with a brand that, you know, we can offer some of these products in. So.
And this, if I understand it right, the Anvil line's priced a little bit more economically than some of the traditional Blickman equipment, right?
Yeah, it's a different market that we're have developed these for, and yeah, so it is at a lower price point, but it still has a real nice high quality, and you know, just not all the high end features that the Blickman line has.
So still designed to last a lifetime. Can you, John? Can you tell people where to find more about this?
Yes, we've got a webpage called anvilbrewing.com, anvilbrewing.com. And if you have any questions after looking at the webpage, you can get us at support@anvilbrewing.com.
And there you go. Well, John, thanks again for coming on the show. Is there anything else you wanted to add? You got anything new in the Blickman line, perhaps, that you want to chat about?
Oh, always new things, but part of the fun of that is the surprise factor. So we've look for some fun things this coming year. So and we've got as far as the Anvil line, we're actually shipping that out as we speak. So you'll see some of that that product line out too. And we also have John Palmer as worked with us to develop some of those Anvil products. Forgot to mention that.
Yeah, John's a good friend of mine. He was on last week, last episode, yep, actually, and he talked a little bit about it. But he's my understanding is he helped put together this line.
Yeah, we use him as a consultant for a lot of these different things, and that's where one of the ways we came up with that the ultimate stovetop kettle. So you know, just a number of those, we've just kind of had John check them out and just kind of reviewed those just to make sure that you know, we were hitting the mark with what that market needed. So but yeah, as far as the rest of the stuff with the high gravity brewing, great topic. Practice and patience. You know, that's what I really recommend there. And of course, the yeast is probably the number one thing to take care of, because that's really where a lot of the flavor problems can happen, is from not having that yeast health.
Well, John, is there anything else you'd like to add? I know you just covered a couple of the topics, but.
All I can say is if there's any, you know, new products or, either in the Blickman or even this new Anvil line that you guys are interested in, don't hesitate to drop us an email at, support@blickmanengineering.com or support@anvilbrewing.com. So.
Well, thank you, John. I really appreciate you being on the show.
All right. Thank you much, Brad. Always good to be on.
And it's always great to have, John Blickman on today. John, of course, is the president of Blickman Engineering. They make high-end brewing equipment, as well as the new Anvil line. at anvilbrewing.com. Thanks, John.
You're welcome. We'll see you, Brad.
Well, thanks again to John Blickman for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine, where you can get your 15% discount on their magazine or anything in their store if you use the offer code BEERSMITH2015 when you shop at beerandbrewing.com. Again, use the offer code BEERSMITH2015 and get your subscription now at beerandbrewing.com. And also, BeerSmith Mobile, the perfect brewing app for your iPhone, iPad, Android, or Kindle Fire device. Learn more about creating great beer recipes with BeerSmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile or on Google Play, iTunes, or the Kindle App Store. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.